Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mplanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Robert Mugabe is attending the India-Africa summit where Harare has secured a number of business deals, including an $87 million loan facility to refurbish Bulawayo Thermal Power Station.
This is one of the trips that the president has been holding since he got into power. And even since the relations between Britain and Zimbabwe and the European Union broke down.
Rights defenders welcome a ruling in favor of a Bulawayo man who had been fired from the civil service for allegedly engaging in homosexual activities.
We see that as a milestone achievement as an organization that advocates for the protection of sexual rights, especially minority groups.
And opposition People's Democratic Party, Tendai Biti, says Zimbabwe can only regain its former glory once the country returns to the rule of law.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. President Robert Mugabe is in India for the India-Africa summit where Harare is said to have secured a number of business deals that may help improve the ailing economy. Top of the deals is one in which India's Exim Bank has offered Zimbabwe an $87 million loan facility for the refurbishment of the Bulawayo Thermal Power Station. The president, according to state media, is leading a huge delegation comprising several government ministers to the summit. The state media described the summit as the largest diplomatic event since the Commonwealth and non-aligned summits of 1983. Several African leaders, including the African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, are attending the four-day summit that ends Thursday. Independent political commentator Chamunorwa Madiridze told Studio 7 Mr. Mugabe, who's been out of the country at least 40 times this year, may not reap much from his current trip, considering not much has come out of the so-called mega deals with China.
This is one of the trips that the president has been holding since he got into power. And even since the relations between Britain and Zimbabwe and the European Union broke down, these trips have been taking place, but to no avail, I can say that. Because the president has gone now to this India-Africa summit, he has been going to NAM summits, and he has been going to a lot of summits.
But Mr. Madiridze, we understand that a deal has been signed between Zimbabwe and India where $89 million will be availed to Zimbabwe to resuscitate the Bulawayo Thermal Power Station. Isn't that going to help the people of Zimbabwe?
Yes, deals are being signed and monies are being availed to the ZANU-PF government. But the challenge that we have in Zimbabwe is that of corruption. The ZANU-PF government is very corrupt to such an extent that if any amount of money is availed to the ZANU-PF government, you'd find out that only 25% of that money might be used towards the objective.
That was independent political commentator Chamunorwa Madiridze in Cape Town, South Africa. We have more on the Exim Bank loan later in the show in our Economist segment. Stay tuned.
I am Blessing Zulu. This week, I'll be bringing you a range of interviews from ZANU-PF and Zimbabwe's opposition parties on their solutions to the country's economic and political crisis. Today, we interview Tendai Biti, the leader of the People's Democratic Party, and tomorrow, we turn to Rugare Gumbo, the interim spokesperson of the People First Project. Don't miss this very important series.
A Bulawayo man who had been fired from the civil service for allegedly engaging in homosexual activities has successfully appealed against his dismissal at the Labour Court. Some human rights defenders are welcoming the ruling. Our correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more.
Labour Court President Justice Evangelista Kabasa yesterday ruled that Raymond Swanda's appeal against dismissal was valid, as no one should be dismissed from work on the basis of their sexual orientation. Justice Kabasa said the case against Swanda had no merit since it involved a moral issue over which there is no absolute right or wrong. Swanda was employed as a youth officer by the Minister of Youth and was fired last year after a disciplinary hearing found him guilty of misconduct. This emanated from Swanda's arrest and payment of an admission of guilt fine for a charge of allegedly performing an indecent act in a public place following a police raid at a hotel on the outskirts of Bulawayo, where he was part of a crowd that attended a Christmas party hosted by the Gays and Lesbians Association of Zimbabwe, commonly known as GALS, in 2013. Swanda was dismissed on the basis of misconduct in terms of civil service regulations for, among other things, quote, putting the name of the ministry into disrespect and disrepute on the grounds that he was engaging in gay practices. Swanda had wanted the court to rule on whether or not his admission to a charge of allegedly performing an indecent act in a public place can be equated to gay practices, and also whether or not he was engaged in gay practices. He had argued that the disciplinary authority should not have regarded his payment of an admission of guilt fine to the charge of performing an indecent act in a public place as conclusive evidence that he was involved in gay practices, adding that the authority had no basis for its findings as they were not supported by any evidence. Justice Kabasa said she would provide a complete written judgment soon. Swanda's lawyer Emmanuel Mlalazi refused to speak on tape but confirmed that his client's appeal against dismissal had been successful. Spokesperson Mujalifa Mkwele of the Sexual Rights Center told Studio 7 that his organization is pleased with the ruling.
We see that as a milestone achievement, says an organization that advocates for the protection of sexual rights, especially minority groups, that it is justice served.
Although they had argued in their heads of argument that Swanda's payment of guilt fine to conduct associated with public indecency and gay activities was enough for the government to sack him, state lawyers from the Attorney General's Civil Division agreed with the court that the dismissal was invalid. The state lawyer said they agreed with the court that the case had no merit, but had gone on to represent their client at the insistence of an unnamed departmental head who had wanted to have Swanda fired as a way of sending a message that, quote, government does not support gay activities. Lawyer Ngobani Nyati of the Abameli Human Rights Lawyers Network told Studio 7 the Constitution of Zimbabwe guarantees equality to all, prohibiting discrimination on any basis.
If you look at Section 56 of the Constitution, it provides for the right to equality and non-discrimination. Obviously, discrimination against people because of their sexual orientation or gender identity is not justified in a democratic society.
The country's statutes outlaw same-sex marriage and sodomy, which is defined as the, quote, unlawful and intentional sexual relations between two human males. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shawa.
The leader of the opposition People's Democratic Party, Tendai Biti, says Zimbabwe can only regain its former glory once the country returns to the rule of law. In an exclusive interview with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, Biti says everything that could go wrong in Zimbabwe has gone wrong, adding the crisis currently gripping the nation can be addressed if all stakeholders come together for the love of the country.
Well, the economy is a byproduct
of the entire fabric and rubric of how a nation should be run. So you can actually have a functional economy, but if the other ducks are not in a row, then you don't have a functional state. So the challenge we have in Zimbabwe is that everything, every institution and every matrix has collapsed and is in a state of disjuncture. So you need a holistic approach to recalibrate and refabricate Zimbabwe as a nation state. And that refabrication and recalibration must start with the matrix of inclusivity, must start with the matrix of respect, of equality, of good governance, of constitutionalism, and the rule of law. All these things must fall into place squarely. So in other words, we have to build a sustainable state, and the part of building a sustainable state obviously and naturally includes an economy.
So on the economy, what's the way forward?
On the economy, there are very few things that are needed to be done. Number one is crafting of a proper economic program and agenda that is realistic, practical, honest, and executable. And I believe that as PDP, we've done this through our HOPE program, the Holistic Program for Economic Transformation. Number two, what is required is, of course, the competence of execution, the craft competence, which clearly is lacking in ZANU-PF at the present moment. Most importantly, we have to restore the social contract. The big thing that ZANU-PF suffers from is that nobody trusts them, nobody believes them. And whatever they may do, nobody takes them seriously. So without the restoration of a social contract, any economic agenda, any economic program will fall to nothing. But quite clearly, the key things right now on the economy per se, speaking now as a technician, are the questions of macroeconomic stability, the questions of resilience, capacity, resolving the debt crisis, resolving the massive gross capital formation challenges, i.e. the challenges around infrastructure, on electricity, on the roads, on the railway. And then, of course, altering the accumulation model, which is false. It's more than 100 years after colonialism, but the accumulation model remains that of processing raw materials. No economy can progress if its accumulation model remains stuck in the past.
You have talked about a transitional authority to rescue Zimbabwe. If you can explain that a little bit.
The key functions of the National Transitional Authority will be the following. Number one, to deal with the issue of the economy, what we are calling this, the Zimbabwe Emergency Stabilization Strategy. Number two, deal with the issue of harmonizing our laws to the new constitution. Number three, just deal with the issue of stability and politics. There's a danger that the securocrats, with the statement that they are making, that they might actually want to descend into the political arena. So political stability must be dealt with and must be maintained.
And let's also talk about the issue of elections. The opposition parties, your party included, have been boycotting the elections, but many Zimbabweans are saying there appear to be no plan B.
Behold my wisdom that we can't find a common platform of convergence as political parties on one issue that we all know, we all agree on, which is the issue that we need electoral reform, among other things, just like we need media reform, just like we need the demilitarization of our state.
The leader of the opposition People's Democratic Party, Tendai Biti, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Access to adequate healthcare resources for young people has lately dominated the news, with parents and advocates calling for the government to prioritize access to affordable resources such as sanitary pads, medical checkups, contraceptives, and screenings, among others. According to the World Health Organization, adolescents often pose different healthcare challenges than children and adults, requiring significant and structured healthcare services. For perspective, reporter Ntungameli Nkomo spoke with Angela Machonesa, communication manager with Plan International Zimbabwe. She says there are varying misconceptions of adolescent health care in Zimbabwe, adding sanitary pads must be distributed freely, especially to school girls.
The adolescent in itself is an age group that has a lot of misconceptions, a lot of fears, a lot of unwanted caution and confusion among adolescents themselves. So there are a lot of biases as well as attitudes that will deter or offset barriers for this group to access services. In as much as they would want to access services from service providers like pharmacies, like health centers, there is a lot of stigmatization. For instance, if an adolescent would approach a health facility to get tested for STI or to get condoms, there's a lot of stigma from frontline staff. So by themselves, adolescents pull off and they do not access these services. There is also a bit of lack of information that can be shared, that is being shared within this age group.
There is a push by parents and many people for government to intervene in the case of sanitary pads, either to make them available in schools or to lower the price. What do you make of that?
I think this is very important. Our socioeconomic environment at the moment, you know, expose a lot of our girls to such a lack because some of them cannot even afford to get the basic sanitary wear. And they are missing school. They are missing a lot of important lessons. And this is really leading to large dropouts of girls.
That was Plan International Zimbabwe Communication Manager Angela Machonesa on the line with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a closer look at a proposed $87 million Indian loan to revive Bulawayo Thermal Power Station.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Voters in the Republic of Congo overwhelmingly approved a constitutional referendum that will allow President Denis Sassou Nguesso to seek another term.
Tanzania's ruling party presidential candidate John Magufuli took an early lead today, but several key cabinet ministers lost their seats as vote counting for Sunday's national elections continued.
And Ivory Coast's election commission is expected to announce today the first results from an election that was widely expected to give President Alassane Ouattara another term in office. As reported earlier, the Export-Import Bank of India was expected to sign an $87 million loan facility with Harare to resuscitate and refurbish the Bulawayo Thermal Power Station. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, who's part of a high-power delegation attending the India-Africa Summit in New Delhi, was expected to sign on behalf of government. The deal is part of India's Africa Focus program, under which the Indian government provides loans for infrastructure, agriculture, and energy development. The Bulawayo Thermal Station, which has a capacity of generating 40 megawatts of power, is currently not producing any power. The Indian loan is expected to bring joy to Zimbabweans who are facing serious power shortages. Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries President Busisa Moyo tells Studio 7 that the deal is a big booster for Zimbabwe's ailing industry and may inspire foreign investors who had lost confidence in the country.
What do you make of the resuscitation of the Bulawayo Thermal Power Station instead of the bigger Wange Thermal Power Station?
We have to look at it practically to say that Wange needs probably a larger amount of money. They say you need $1 million for every megawatt that you want to generate. So if you are trying to bring 400 megawatts back or 200, you need 200 million. So I think also our partners are looking at their own pocket and saying this is what we're willing to commit at this stage. I think we need to be grateful and say it's 89 million. It's going to come into the Bulawayo money circles. It's going to filter into the Bulawayo economy, into the Zimbabwean economy. So those are positive things. I think we would also like to see 89 million services being procured from Bulawayo companies, Bulawayo people also being employed by that project so that it really filters into the Bulawayo economic system and also brings much needed the upliftment and hope.
Do you see investor confidence being generated by this deal?
Yes, absolutely. We see lots of confidence. As I said, the Lima Peru, the success in Lima Peru, under the work done by Minister Chilangata and the team and His Excellency, his plan included very clearly foreign direct investment, the re-engagement of the international community. We're not saying we agree with everything they have to say, but we need to engage, we need to discourse. And so what the Ministry of Finance and Ministry of Industry have been doing, Ministry of Tourism as well, have been re-engaging so that we don't remain isolated. This is confidence building. This builds confidence. And in this country, we don't really have a resource problem. We don't have a people problem. We've got a confidence problem. And so we need to re-engage and rebuild confidence. When you rebuild confidence with your creditors, you rebuild confidence also of those people that want to invest in the country. And so I believe that going forward, we will see more and more of these transactions, these big deals that are coming onto the table, deals that really make an economic impact, not the smaller transactions that are taking place, which are also useful, but we need these deals as well.
That was Busisa Moyo, the president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries. He spoke to Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
The Book Cafe, a hub that has and continues to play a crucial role in promoting arts and culture in the country, will next month begin pop-up shows to cater for local artists. In an announcement on their Facebook page, the organization said it will host the first show at the Ambassador Hotel on the 7th. Bashupi, an artist who was discovered at the Book Cafe, welcomes the new mobile outreaching, saying it will benefit untapped young talent in the country. I caught up with Bashupi earlier on.
When the Book Cafe was closed, it was actually a big blow to so many artists, not only in Harare, but around the country, because it's the only place where artists would come and explore and showcase their talent, where the Book Cafe would provide the PA system, the advertising, the marketing, the engineers. What you bring was all your band, and they would teach you everything to make you an artist, an opportunity where you would come to a show and people would pay by the gate, and the human that will support you after he's not put anything into it. So many artists had a big blow because so many artists had been discovered and performing at Book Cafe year-round. But after it was closed, it was a big blow even for me as well because I was discovered as well through the Book Cafe, through the open mic. And my old band, I founded the Book Cafe where you used to meet all the artists. But now that it's closed, it's a very big blow. But now they're coming back to come up with pop-up shows. It's an advantage and a good thing, but not enough. We wish they would open a place called the Book Cafe. But this pop-up shows will also help us. Book Cafe is the only promoter, I would call a promoter in Zimbabwe, who takes care of artists 100%.
Tell us your story. What role did the Book Cafe play in your own personal life?
I was an artist. I grew up in Bulawayo, and I moved to Masingo. But when I heard about the Book Cafe, I used to travel from Masingo every Sunday to attend open mic every Monday. And that's where I met the band. So the Book Cafe gave me the opportunity to showcase my talent.
Local artist Baba Shupi speaking with Studio 7 from Harare earlier on.
The curtain finally came down today on the month-long Zimbabwe International Carnival, and what a day it was for music lovers and pickpockets. Reporter Michael Kariati tells us what happened.
Thousands of Zimbabweans took their time to forget their social and economic problems to converge on the Glamis Arena to enjoy themselves as the curtain finally came down on the 2015 Zimbabwe International Carnival. Even on a $10 gate entry fee, over 10,000 people, both young and the old, were at the arena to enjoy themselves, sing and dance along with Jamaican music star Busy Signal and a host of Zimbabwean dancehall icons. Enjoy, they really did. Beer and drinks were at a premium at $2 each, but that was not considered as Zimbabweans jostled to grab either a can or a six-pack. Killer T was there. So too was the colors. Freeman, Soldier Love, and Dadza D were all there to entertain the fans. Of this magnificent lineup, it was only Dadza D who, during his performance, experienced countless power cuts. The Zimbabwe dancehall musician, however, did not blame Zesa for the power problem, but claimed it was sabotage by his rivals.
So somebody don't have to sabotage. Whoever is in charge should not do this.
Busy Signal, though, was the major highlight and received a large applause when he took to the stage and belted out the crowd's favorite, Dreams of Brighter Days. He also took the time for one more night. However, there was another section of the crowd that felt the Jamaican musician did not perform to their expectation and asked him to leave the stage before his time was over. This was in favor of Man of the Moment, Ja Praiser, who did not disappoint and went straight into the hit song Jerusalema with the crowd singing along. The excitement of the crowd, however, also opened up to pickpockets who had a field evening. Many lost their mobile phones and cash, but after an enjoyable evening, they did not care about the belongings they lost. However, such occasions do not go without their own bad incidents. Property was damaged after fans threw missiles onto the stage after one of the musicians, Winky D, failed to take to the stage as promised. The last day of the carnival provided enough evidence that Zimbabweans love their entertainment and enjoyment. But unfortunately, they cannot regularly attend such shows as there is now less and less disposable income for them to do so. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts of the Youth Connection will lead discussions on youth and health issues.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
President Mugabe is attending the India-Africa Summit where Harare has secured a number of business deals.
And opposition People Democratic Party leader Tendai Biti says Zimbabwe can only regain its former glory once the country returns to the rule of law.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande, but please do stand by for the news in Ndebele.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye saying good night.